Ethan turned down an ancient stairwell carved from rock, taking the steps two at a time. At the bottom, the rough, tunnel-like hall ran in two directions. She turned to the soldiers still racing down the stairs behind.
Split up, half each way. This is the lowest level. When you encounter more junctures, cover them all. Remember which way you went at each turn, or you could be lost down here for days. You've seen what he can do. If you find him, don't take a chance trying to take him. Post sentries so we know if he backtracks, and then send runners to come get me.
How will we find you?
One asked. Colin looked to the right.
At every choice, I'll take the one to the right, so you can follow where I went. Now hurry! I think he's headed for any opening out of the palace he can find. We can't let him get out. If he gets to the keep, he can get through shields there that I can't.
With Nadine and half the men, Colin rushed on through the dank hall. They encountered several rooms, all empty, and before long, several more corridors. At every branch, she divided the men and took her continually dwindling force to the right.
What's the wizard's keep?
Nadine asked as they moved on through the darkness.
It's a massive fortress, a stronghold where wizards used to live. It predates the Confessor's palace.
Colin lifted a hand, indicating the palace above them.
In ages long forgotten, nearly everyone was born with the gift. Over the last 3,000 years, the gift has been dying out in the race of man.
What's in the keep?
Living quarters, long abandoned, libraries, rooms of every sort, and things of magic are stored there. Books, weapons, things like that. Shields protect important or dangerous parts of the keep. Those without magic can't pass through any of the shields. Since I was born with magic, I can pass through some of them, but not all. The keep is vast. It makes the Confessor's Palace look like a cramped cottage by comparison. In the Great War, 3,000 years ago, the keep was filled with wizards and their families. Richard says it was a place filled with laughter and life. At that time, the wizards had both subtractive and additive magic.
And now they don't?
No. Only Richard has been born with both sides. There are places in the keep that I and the wizards I grew up with could not enter because the shields are so powerful. There are other places that have not been entered in thousands of years because they are shielded with both sides of the magic. No one could get past the shields. But Richard can. I fear Marlin can, too.
Sounds a dreadful place.
I've spent a good portion of my life there, studying books of language and learning from the wizards. I never thought of it as anything but part of my home.
Where are these wizards now? Can't they help us?
They all killed themselves at the end of last summer in the war with Tarkin Rall.
Killed themselves? How awful! Why would they do that?
Colin was silent for a moment as they moved relentlessly onward into the darkness. It all seemed a dream from another life.
We needed to find the first wizard, to have him appoint the Seeker of Truth to stop Tarkin Rall. Zed was the first wizard. He was in Westland, on the other side of the boundary. The boundary was linked to the underworld, the world of the dead, so no one was able to cross it. Tarkin Rall was also hunting Zed. It took all the wizards to conjure magic to get me through the boundary to go after Zed. If Tarkin Rall had captured the wizards, he might have used his vile magic to make them confess what they knew. To give me the time to have a chance to succeed, the wizards killed themselves. Tarkin Rall still managed to send assassins after me. That was when I met Richard. He protected me.
Bluntcliff?
Nadine said in questioning amazement.
There were 4 huge men found dead at the bottom of the cliff. They had leather uniforms and weapons of every sort. No one had ever seen men like them before.
That was then.
What happened?
Colin gave her a sidelong glance.
Something like you and your experience with Tommy Lancaster?
Richard did that? Richard killed those men?
Colin nodded.
2 of them. I took another with my power, and he killed the last. Those were probably the first men Richard had ever encountered who wanted to do more to him than simply give him a beating when he chose to protect someone. To protect me. Richard has had to make a lot of hard choices since that day on Blunt Cliff.
For what seemed like hours, but she knew couldn't be more than 15 or 20 minutes, they continued on into the dark, stinking halls. The stone blocks were larger. Some so huge that single blocks ran from floor to ceiling. They were roughly cut, but fit with no less precision than the other mortarless jointwork elsewhere in the palace. The halls were wetter, too, with water running down the walls in places, draining into small, tiled weep holes at the edges of the floor that had a crown to direct the water to the drains. Some of the drains were plugged with debris, allowing shallow pools to form. Rats used the tiled drains as tunnels. They squeaked and scurried away at the approach of light and sound, some taking to the drains, some running on ahead.
Colin thought again of Kara and wondered if she was still alive. It seemed too cruel that she should die before having a chance to taste life without the madness that shadowed her. A series of connecting tunnels finally reduced Colin's company to Nadine and two men. The way was so narrow that they had to proceed single file. The low, arched ceiling forced them to trot in a crouch. Colin saw no blood. Jagang probably used his control of Marlin's mind to cut the flow, but in several places she did see that the slime on the wall was smeared in horizontal streaks. As low and narrow as the passageway was, it would be difficult to avoid grazing the close walls. Colin brushed against the wall more than she wished to. It hurt her shoulder when the knuckles of her hand over the wound struck the slimy stone. Marlin, Jagang, had to have been through the passageway and brushed against the same wall. She felt both a rush of heady relief that she was on his tail and terror at the prospect of catching him. The arched passageway narrowed again and the ceiling became even lower. They had to hunch into a deep crouch to proceed. The flames from the torches folded to lap at the stone close overhead, and the smoke billowed along the ceiling, burning their eyes. As the passageway started into a steep descent, they all slipped and fell more than once. Nadine skinned her elbow as she fell on it while maintaining a grip on the torch. Colin slowed, but didn't stop as one of the soldiers helped Nadine regain her feet. The other three quickly caught up. Ahead, Colin heard the rush of water. The narrow passageway opened into a large, tubular tunnel. Water rushed in a torrent down the round tunnel that was part of the drainage system below the palace. Colin paused at the edge.
"What now, Mother Confessor?"
one of the soldiers asked. "Stick to the plan. I'll go with Nadine downstream, to the right. You two go upstream to the left."
"But if he's trying to get out, he would have gone to the right," the soldier said. "He would hope to get out where the water does. We should go with you."
"Unless he knows we're after him, and he's trying to send us the wrong way. You two go left. Come on, Nadine."
"In there? The water must be waist deep."
"A little more, I'd say. It's runoff from the spring melt. It's usually no more than a foot or two deep. There are stepping stones along the other side, but they're just underwater now. In the center of where this passageway opens into the drain tunnel, there will be an oblong stone to step across on." Colin stretched and stepped out, putting a foot into the center of the torrent and onto the flat stone just under the surface of the water. She lifted her other leg across the rushing water, testing until her foot found one of the stones against the far wall. She clasped a hand with Nadine and boosted herself across. Standing on the stone, the water was only ankle deep, but it quickly soaked through the lacing and filled her boots. It was ice cold.
"See?"
Colin's voice echoed, and she hoped it didn't carry far.
"But be careful. It isn't an unbroken walkway. The stones are spaced apart."
Colin moved to the next stepping stone and gave Nadine a hand across. She gestured to the men to go up the tunnel. They crossed and moved quickly off into the darkness. Soon the light from the men's torches vanished around a bend, and Colin was left with Nadine in the dim light of a single torch. Colin hoped it would last long enough.
"Careful now," she said to Nadine.
Nadine cupped her ear. It was hard to hear over the roar of the water. Colin put her mouth close and repeated the admonition. She didn't want to yell and alert Jagang if he was close. Even if the torch had been brighter, they wouldn't have been able to see far. The drainage tunnel twisted and turned on its way down and out of the palace underground. Colin had to put a hand to the cold, slimy stone wall in order to keep her balance. In several places, the tunnel took a steep descent, the stones along the side following it down like a stairway down through a roaring rapid. Icy water misted the air and soaked them to the skin. Even in the flatter sections, running was impossible, as they had to step carefully from stone to stone. If they went too fast and missed a step, they could break an ankle. Down in the tunnel, in the water, with Jagang somewhere about, would be a very bad place to be hurt. The blood running afresh down Colin's arm reminded her that she was already hurt, but at least she could walk. That was when Nadine squealed from behind and went into the water.
"Don't lose the torch!"
Colin screamed. Nadine, chest deep in the rushing water, thrust the torch up in the air to keep it from being doused. Colin snatched her wrist and strained against the drag of the water as the current swept Nadine past. There was nothing for Colin to grab hold of with her other hand.
She hooked the heels of her boots over the edge of the stepping stone to keep from being pulled off. Nadine thrashed with her other hand, searching for one of the stepping stones. She found one and grasped it. With Colin's help, she pulled herself back up.
Dear spirits, that water is cold. I told you to be careful. Something, a rat, I think, grabbed my leg, she said, trying to catch her breath.
I'm sure it was dead. I've seen others float past. Now be careful. Nadine nodded in embarrassment. Because she had been swept past Colin, Nadine was now in the lead. Colin didn't see how they could change places without a struggle, so she motioned Nadine on. Nadine turned to start out. Suddenly, a huge shape erupted from the black depths. Water sluiced from Marlin as he bobbed up and snatched Nadine's ankle with his one hand. She shrieked as she was yanked feet first into the inky water. Chapter 11. On her way down, Nadine swung the torch and caught Marlin square across the bridge of his nose. He let go of her as he madly groped to wipe the burning pitch from his eyes. The current swept him away. Colin gripped Nadine's arm, still holding the torch above the water, and helped her back up on the stepping stone for a second time. They flattened themselves against the wall, gulping air and shaking in shock.
Well,
Colin said at last,
at least we know which way he went.
Nadine was shivering violently from her second dunking. Her hair was plastered to her head and neck.
I can't swim. Now I know why I never wanted to learn. I don't like it.
Colin smiled to herself. The woman had more pluck than she would have thought. Her smile wilted when she remembered why Nadine was there and who had sent her. Colin realized that in the surprise of the ambush she had missed her chance to get Jagang.
Let me go first.
Nadine held the torch up with both hands. Colin put her arms around Nadine's waist as they twisted around on tiptoes to change places on the stone. The woman was as cold as a fish in winter. Colin wasn't much warmer from being in the frigid tunnels with the icy water lapping around her ankles. Her toes were numb.
What if he swims upstream and escapes?
Nadine asked, her teeth chattering.
I don't think that likely with only one arm. He was probably holding a stone, keeping just his face above the surface as he lurked in the water, waiting for us. And what if he does it again?
I'm in front now. It will be me he grabs hold of, and that will be the last mistake he makes.
And what if he waits until you pass, and pops up and grabs me again?
Then hit him harder the next time.
I hit him as hard as I could.
Colin smiled and gave Nadine a reassuring squeeze on her arm.
I know you did. You did the right thing. You did well.
They inched along the wall, passing several more gentle turns, watching the water the whole time for Marlin's face peering up at them. Both started at things they saw in the water, but it always turned out to be nothing more than pieces of flotsam. The torch was spluttering more and looked to be near its end. The drains all led outside, and they had traveled a goodly distance in this one. Colin knew that the tunnel must end soon. She realized the thought was more hope than knowledge. As a girl, she had explored the tunnels and drains down here, though not when they had been so swollen with runoff, and although she had a good idea of where she was, she didn't know their exact location. She remembered that some drainage tunnels seemed to go on forever. As they moved along, the sound of the roaring water seemed to change pitch. Colin wasn't sure what that meant. Ahead, the tunnel bent to the right. A thump that she could feel in her chest more than hear made her stop. She held out a hand, not only to halt Nadine, but to signal silence. The wet stone of the walls ahead brightened, glistening with a reflected bluish glow from something beyond the bend. A low howl rose in pitch until they could hear it clearly over the rush of the water. A boiling ball of flame exploded from around the bend. Raging yellow and blue flame, filling the entire tunnel, tumbled as it raced toward them with a wail. Liquid fire, seething with all-consuming menace. Wizard's fire. Colin snatched Nadine by the hair.
Hold your breath!
Pulling Nadine with her, Colin dived into the water just ahead of the angry fury of roiling flame. The icy water was such a shock that she almost gasped it in. Under the churning water, it was difficult to tell up from down. Colin opened her eyes. She saw the wavering glow of the inferno overhead. Nadine was struggling to get to the surface. Colin jammed her left hand against the underside of a stepping stone to hold herself under, and with her good arm held Nadine under with her. Nadine, in the panic of drowning, fought to escape. Panic clawed at Colin, too. When everything went black, Colin, her lungs burning for air, thrust her head above the water, pulling Nadine up with her. Nadine choked and coughed as she gasped. Long, sodden strands of hair covered both their faces. Another tumbling ball of wizard's fire raced up the tunnel.
Get a big breath!
Colin screamed. She sucked a deep breath herself and went under, dragging Nadine down with her. They went under without an instant to spare. Colin knew that, given a choice, Nadine would have chosen to die in the fire rather than drown, but the water was their only chance. Wizard's fire burned with deadly determination, with the resolve of the wizard who conjured it. They couldn't keep doing this. The water was so cold she was shivering uncontrollably already. She knew that cold water by itself could kill a person. They couldn't stay in the water. It would end up killing them as sure as the wizard's fire. They couldn't get to Jigang through Marlin's wizard's fire. If they were to reach him in time, there was only one way. They would have to go under the fire, under the water. Colin repressed her panic at the thought of drowning, made sure she had a good grip around Nadine's waist, and then pushed away from the stepping stone she had been gripping for dear life. The wet wrath of water swept them away in its frigid flux. She could feel herself tumbling under the water as she scraped and bumped along the stone. When her shoulder hit on something, she almost screamed, but the thought of losing her breath instantly locked her throat shut even tighter. With frenzied need of air and blackness disorienting her, she knew she had to come up. She was holding Nadine in a death grip with her good arm. With her other hand, she managed to hook a stone. With Nadine's weight in addition to her own, it felt as if the rush of water would rip her arm from its socket. When her head cleared the surface, there was light. Not 20 feet away was a stone lattice. Late afternoon light poured in through the openings above the water level. As Colin pulled Nadine's head above the water, she clamped a hand over the woman's mouth. On one of the stepping stones to the side, near the stone grate, facing away, stood Marlin. Colin could see the broken shafts of at least a half dozen arrows sticking from his back. By the way Marlin was staggering as he stepped to the next stone, she knew he couldn't live much longer. If only she could count on him dying before he reached the keep. The stump of his left arm wasn't bleeding. Jigang was obviously driving the wounded man relentlessly onward. She had no idea what Jigang was capable of in controlling the man's mind to keep him alive and moving. She had no concern for the life he occupied, and she knew he would be willing to let Marlin suffer any damage to accomplish Jigang's wishes. Marlin lifted a hand, fingers spread, toward the stone grate. Colin had grown up around wizards. Marlin was conjuring air. A section of the lattice grate exploded outward in a cloud of dust and stone fragments. More light poured in through the blasted opening. The suddenly wider spillway let the water flood out with yet greater force. Colin's injured arm had no strength, and the mounting might of the discharge tore her away from the stone step. She lost her grip on Nadine. In the powerful clutch of the water, Colin grasped frantically for a handhold, but found none. She twisted and tumbled under the water, trying with her arms and legs to grapple something. She hadn't had a chance to get a good breath, and she struggled, too, to fight her terror at her exigent need for air. Her fingers caught the sharp stone at the edge of the blasted hole. The water sucked her under and jammed her hard against the lower part of the grate. She could only force her head and part of one shoulder above the surface. It seemed she was breathing more water than air. Colin looked up. Jigang's wicked smile greeted her. He was only a few feet away. The force of the water ramming against her crushed her tight to the broken grate. She didn't have the muscle to overcome the pounding weight of the water. Try as she might, she couldn't get to him. It was all she could do to get a breath. She glanced over her shoulder. What she saw took the breath for which she had fought so hard. They were on the east side of the palace, the high side of the foundation. The water roared out of the drainage gateway to plunge for a good 50 feet before crashing to the rocks below. Jigang chuckled.
Well, well, darling, how nice of you to drop by to witness my escape.
Where are you going, Jigang?
She managed.
I thought I'd go up to the keep.
Colin gasped for air and caught a mouthful of water instead. She coughed and choked it out.
Why do you want to go to the keep? What's there that you want?
Darling, you're deluding yourself if you think I would reveal anything I don't want you to know.
What did you do to Kara?
He smiled, but didn't answer. He lifted Marlin's hand. A blast of air shattered more of the grate to the side. The stone she was holding gave way. Her back scraped over the broken edge. Colin snatched for a solid piece and just caught it with her fingers before she was ejected from the drain. When she looked down, she was looking at the rocks below the foundation. Water thundered above her. She worked her fingers over the sharp stone, struggling desperately to pull herself back behind what was left of the grate. Panic powering her effort, she regained the inside of the stone lattice, but she couldn't get away from it. The water kept her pinned.
Problem, darling?
Colin wanted to scream at him, but she could only gasp for air as she fought to keep from being swept through the opening. Her arms burned with the effort. She could think of nothing to do to stop him. She thought of Richard. Jagang lifted Marlin's hand again, spreading his fingers. Nadine popped up from the water right behind him. With one hand, she held a stone step. In her other, she still gripped the dead torch. Looking as if she was at the ragged edge of madness, she took a mighty swing, clubbing him across the back of his knees. Marlin's legs folded under him, and he toppled into the water right in front of Colin. He caught himself on the broken grate with his one hand. When he saw what waited outside, he frantically tried to push himself back. Apparently, he hadn't anticipated that there might be no way down from the drain tunnel. Nadine clutched a stepping stone and held on for dear life. Colin reached behind with her injured arm, stuffed her left hand through a grate opening under the water, and made a fist to lodge it fast. With her other hand, she seized Marlin by the throat.
"Well, well," she said through gritted teeth. "Look what I have here, the great and all-powerful Emperor Jagang."
He grinned, showing broken teeth.
"Actually, darling," he said in Jagang's grating, impudent voice, "you have Marlin."
She pulled herself close to his face.
"Think so? Do you know that a confessor's magic works faster than thought? That's why once we're touching someone, they have no chance. None. The magic bond of my loyalty to Richard Rawl denies a dreamwalker access to my mind. Marlin's mind is our field of battle now. Do you suppose that my magic might work faster than yours? What do you think? Do you think I can take you along with Marlin?"
"Two minds at once," he said with a smirk. "I don't think so, darling."
"We'll see. Maybe I'll get you too. Maybe we'll end the war and the Imperial Order right here and now."
"Darling, you are a fool. Man is destined to free his world from the shackles of magic. Even if you could kill me here and now, which you can't, you will not end the Order. It will survive any one man, even me, because it is the struggle of all mankind to inherit our world."
"Do you really expect me to believe that you don't do this for yourself, for naked power?"
"Not at all. I relish rule. But I simply ride a horse already in full charge. It will run you down. You are a fool who follows the dying religion of magic."
"A fool who has you by the throat. The great Jagang who professes to want man to triumph over magic, it uses magic?"
"For now. But when magic dies, I will be the one with the daring and the muscle to rule. Without magic."
Fury erupted through Colin. This was the man who had ordered the deaths of thousands of innocent people. This was the butcher of Ebenezer. This was the man who would enslave the world. This was the man who wanted to kill Richard. In the silence of her mind, in the core of her power, where there was no cold, no exhaustion, no fear, she had all the time in the world. Though he made no attempt to escape, even if he had, it would have been hopeless. He was hers. Colin did as she had done countless times before. She released her restraint. For an imperceptible twitch of time, something was different. There was resistance where there had been none before. A wall. Like hot steel through glass, her power crashed through it. The magic exploded through Marlin's mind, thunder without sound. Stone chips fell from the ceiling at the concussion. Water droplets danced. Despite the water's rush, a ring of ripples raced outward around the two of them, driving a wall of mist and dust. Nadine, clinging to the stepping stone, cried out in the pain of being so close to a confessor's power unleashed. Marlin's mouth went slack. Once a person's mind had been destroyed by a confessor, they became a vessel needing her command. Marlin offered no such abdication. Blood streamed from his ears and nose. His head lolled to the side in the rushing torrent. His dead eyes stared. Colin released her grip of his throat when his hand went slack on the grate and the water tore him away. Marlin's body tumbled out through the broken stone lattice and plummeted to the rocks below. Colin knew she had almost had Jigang, but she failed. His thoughts, his ability as a dreamwalker, had been too fast for her confessor's magic to catch. Nadine was reaching toward her.
Grab my hand! I can't hold on forever!
Colin locked wrists with her. Using her power drained a confessor of strength. After using her magic, it took even Colin, the mother confessor, and perhaps the strongest confessor ever born, several hours before she could use her power again, but longer than that to fully recover her strength. She was exhausted and couldn't fight the torrent any longer. Without Nadine's hold on her, she would have gone over the edge too. With Nadine's help, Colin managed to regain the stepping stones. Shivering with the cold, they both dragged themselves up. Nadine wept at the crest of terror that had passed and had almost taken them. Colin was too exhausted to weep, but she knew how Nadine felt.
I wasn't touching him when you used magic, but I thought every one of my joints had popped apart. It didn't do anything to me, did it? Anything magic? Am I going to die too?
No, you're fine, Colin assured her. You simply felt the pain because you were too close, that's all. If you had been touching him, though, it would have been inconceivably worse. You would have been destroyed. Nadine nodded in mute reply. Colin put an arm around her and whispered a thank you in her ear. Nadine smiled the tears away. We have to get back to Kara, Colin said. We have to hurry.
Oh, the torch is gone. There's no way down the outside, and as soon as we try to go back, it will be pitch black. I don't want to go back there in the dark. It's impossible until the soldiers come with torches to light our way.
Nothing is impossible, Colin said wearily. We took every turn to the right, so we have only to put a hand on the left wall and follow it to find our way back. Nadine threw her hand out, pointing back into the blackness.
That may be all fine and good in the halls, but when we came into this drainage tunnel, we crossed over to the other side. There aren't steps on that side. We'll never find the opening.
The water rushing over the stepstone in the center of the tunnel had a different sound. Didn't you notice? I'll remember it. Colin took Nadine's hand to give her encouragement. We have to try. Kara needs help. Nadine stared in wordless worry for a moment and then said,
All right, but wait a moment.
She tore a strip from the shredded hem of Colin's dress and wound it around Colin's upper arm, closing the wound as best she could. Colin winced when Nadine drew the knot tight.
Let's go, Nadine said. But be careful until I can sew it closed and put a poultice on it.
Chapter 12 They made excruciatingly slow progress back up the drainage tunnel. The blind trek, groping along the cold, slimy stone with the water coursing about their ankles and the constant fear of falling into the raging water in the darkness, was at least devoid of the terror that Marlin might pop up, grab their legs, and pull them in. When Colin heard the sound of the water change and its echo into the hall, she held Nadine's hand and probed with a foot until she found the stepstone across the channel. Partway back through the dark labyrinth of tunnels and halls, the soldiers found them and led the way with torches. In a numb haze, Colin followed the wavering flames of the torches as they plunged ever onward into the black nothingness. It was an effort to put one foot in front of the other. Colin wished for nothing more than to lie down, even if it were on the cold, wet stone. Outside the pit, the halls were crowded with hundreds of grim soldiers. Archers all had arrows knocked. Spears were at the ready, as were swords and axes. Other weapons from the fight with Marlin were still embedded in the stone. She doubted that anything short of magic would remove them. The dead and wounded had been cleared away, but blood boasted where they had lain. Screams were no longer coming from the pit. Colin recognized Captain Harris, who had been up in Petitioner's Hall earlier in the day.
Has anyone gone down there to help her, Captain?
No, Mother Confessor. He didn't even have the decency to look sheepish about it.
De Haren's feared magic and felt no loss of pride admitting it. Lord Rawl was the magic against magic. They were the steel against steel. It was as simple as that. Colin couldn't bring herself to reprimand the men in the hall for leaving Kara alone. They had shown their bravery in the fight with Marlin. Many of them had been killed or seriously injured. Going down into the pit was different from fighting something that came out. Defending themselves was different in their minds from going out and looking for trouble with magic. For their part of the bargain, the steel against steel, the Haran soldiers fought to the death. They expected their Lord Rawl to do his part, and his part was dealing with magic. Colin read the apprehension in all the waiting eyes.
The assassin, the man who escaped the pit, is dead. It's over.
Soft sighs of relief could be heard up and down the hall, but by the anxious expression still on the captain's face, she knew she must look quite a mess.
I think we should get you some help, Mother Confessor.
Later.
Colin started for the ladder. Nadine followed.
How long has she been silent, Captain?
Maybe an hour.
That was about when Marlin died. Come with us and bring a couple more men so we can get Kara out of there.
Kara was on the far side of the room, near the wall where Colin had seen her last. Colin knelt on one side, Nadine on the other, as the soldiers held torches so they could see. Kara was in convulsions of some sort. Her eyes were closed, and she was no longer screaming, but she shook violently, her arms and legs thrashing against the stone floor. She was choking on her own vomit. Colin gripped the shoulder of Kara's red leather and yanked her onto her side.
"Open her mouth!"
Nadine leaned over from behind and pushed her thumb against the back of Kara's jaw, forcing it forward. With her other hand, she pressed down on her chin, keeping her mouth open. Colin swept two fingers through Kara's mouth several times until she had cleared her airway.
"Breathe!"
Colin yelled.
"Breathe, Kara, breathe!"
Nadine slapped the prone woman on the back, eliciting gurgling, wet, choking coughs that finally brought a semblance of clear, if gasping, breathing. Although she was able to breathe, it didn't halt the convulsions. Colin felt helpless.
"I better go get my things," Nadine said. "What's wrong with her?"
"I don't really know. A paroxysm of some sort. I'm no expert, but I think we need to stop it."
"I might be able to help. I might have something in my bag."
"You two, go show her the way. Leave a torch."
Nadine and the two soldiers raced up the ladder after one of them shoved the torch in a bracket on the wall.
"Mother Confessor," Captain Harris said,
"just a little while ago, a Rock Moss showed up in Petitioner's Hall."
"A what?"
"A Rock Moss, from Dahara."
"I don't know much about Dahara. Who are they?"
"They're a secret sect. I don't know much about them myself. The Rock Moss keep to themselves and are rarely seen."
"Get to the point. What's he doing here?"
"This one is the Rock Moss High Priest himself. The Rock Moss are healers. He says he sensed that a new Lord Rawl had become master of Dahara, and he came to offer his services to his new master."
"A healer? Well, don't just stand there. Go get him. Maybe he can help. Hurry!"
Captain Harris clapped a fist to his heart before racing up the ladder. Colin pulled Kara's shoulders and head onto her lap and held her tight, trying to calm her convulsions. Colin didn't know what else to do. She knew a lot about hurting people, but little about healing them.
She was so sick of hurting people.
She wished she knew more about helping people, like Nadine.
"Hold on, Kara,"
she whispered as she rocked the shaking woman.
"Help is coming. Hold on."
Cullen's eyes were drawn to the top of the opposite wall. The words incised in the stone stared back. She knew nearly every language in the Midlands, all confessors did, but she knew nothing about High Dahiran. High Dahiran was a dead language. Few people knew the ancient tongue. Richard was learning High Dahiran. He and Berdine worked together translating the journal they had found in the keep. Kolo's journal, they called it, which had been written in High Dahiran in the Great War 3,000 years before. Richard would be able to translate the prophecy on the wall. She wished he couldn't. She didn't want to know what it said. Prophecy was never anything but trouble. She didn't want to believe that Jagang had unleashed some unknown, festering plague of torment on them, but she couldn't find a good reason to doubt his word. She pressed her cheek to the top of Kara's head and closed her eyes. She didn't want to see the prophecy. She wanted it gone. Colin felt tears running down her face. She didn't want Kara to die. She didn't know why she should feel so much for this woman.
except perhaps because no one else did. The soldiers wouldn't even come down to see why she had stopped screaming. She could have choked to death on her own vomit. Something as simple as that, not magic, could have killed her because they were afraid, or perhaps because no one cared if she died.
Hold on, Kara. I care.
She smoothed the moored Sith's hair back from her clammy forehead.
I care. We want you to live.
Cullen squeezed the quaking woman as if trying to squeeze her words, her concern, into her. It occurred to her that Kara wasn't so different from herself. Kara was trained to hurt people. When it all came down to it, Cullen was much the same. She used her power to destroy a person's mind. She knew that she was doing it to save others, but it was still hurting people. Mord Sith hurt people, but to them it was to help their master, to preserve his life, and that in turn was to save the lives of the Dharan people. Dear spirits, was she no more than this Mord Sith she was trying to bring back from madness? Cullen could feel the Aegil hanging around her neck, pressing against her chest as she held Kara. Was she a sister of the Aegil in more ways than one? If Nadine had been killed in the beginning, would she have cared? Nadine helped people. She didn't make a life of hurting them. No wonder Richard had been attracted to her. She wiped her cheek as the tears ran more freely. Her shoulder throbbed. She hurt all over. She wanted Richard to hold her. She knew he was going to be angry, but she needed him so badly at that moment. It was hurting her shoulder to hold the trembling woman in her lap, but she refused to let go.
Hold on, Kari. You're not alone. I'm with you. I won't leave you. I promise.
Is she any better?
Nadine asked as she scurried down the ladder.
No, she's still unconscious and shaking like before.
As she knelt, Nadine let her bag drop to the floor beside Cullen. Things inside banged together with muffled sounds.
I told those men to wait up there. We don't want to move her until we can bring her out of it, and they'll just be in the way.
Nadine started pulling things out of her bag, little folded cloth packages, leather pouches with markings scratched on them, and stoppered horn containers, likewise scratched with symbols. She briefly inspected the markings before setting each item aside.
Blue Kosh,
she mumbled to herself as she squinted at the cryptic marks on one of the leather pouches.
No, I don't think it would do, and she'd have to drink cups of it.
She took out several more leather pouches before pausing at another.
Pearly Everlasting. Might work, but we'd have to get her to smoke it somehow.
She sighed irritably.
That won't do.
She considered a horn.
Mugwort,
she muttered as she set it aside.
Feverfew?
She put that horn in the damp sling of her dress in her lap.
Yes, Betany might be of some good too,
she said as she considered another. She added the horn to her lap. Cullen picked up one of the horns Nadine had set aside and pulled its cork. The pungent smell of anise made her pull back. She pushed the cork back in and set it down. She picked up another. Two circles were deeply scratched into the patina of the horn. A horizontal line ran through both circles. Cullen wiggled the carefully carved wooden stopper, trying to pull it free. Nadine slapped the horn out of Colin's hands.
Don't!
Cullen looked up in surprise.
Sorry. I didn't mean to snoop in your things. I was... No, it's not that.
She picked up the horn with the two circles struck through with a line and held it up.
This is powdered cayenne pepper. If you aren't careful when you open it, you could get it on your hands, or worse, in your face. It's a powerful substance that will immobilize a person for a time. If you had opened it carelessly, you would have been on the floor, blind and gasping for air, convinced you were about to die. I thought about using it on Kara to stop her shaking by paralyzing her, but I decided it best not to. It immobilizes a person partly by interfering with their breathing. It feels like it's burning your eyes out of your head. It blinds you. Your nose feels on fire. You're sure your heart is going to burst and you can't get your breath. You're helpless. Trying to wash it off only makes it worse because the powder is oily and just spreads. It doesn't cause any real harm, and you'd recover completely in a short time, but until then, you're disabled and totally helpless. I don't think immobilizing Kara in that fashion would be good, since she's already having trouble breathing. In her state, it might make her worse instead of helping her.
Do you know what to do to help her?
You do know what to do, don't you?
Colin asked, trying not to sound critical. Nadine's hand paused on the edge of her bag.
Well, I think I do. It's not so common a problem that I'm sure, but I've heard of it. My father has mentioned it in passing.
Colin wasn't reassured. Nadine found a small bottle in her bag and held it up in the torchlight. She pulled the cork and turned the bottle upside down on a finger.
Hold her head up.
What is it? Colin asked as she turned Kara over. She watched Nadine rub the substance on Kara's temples.
Oil of lavender. It helps with headaches.
I think she has more than a simple headache.
I know, but until I find something else, it might help ease the pain, and that might help calm her. I don't think I have any one thing that by itself will do it. I'll need to try to add things together. The problem is that, with the convulsions, we can't get her to drink decoctions or teas. Motherwort and linden help calm people, but we can't get her to drink a whole cup of it in water. Black whorehound would help stop the vomiting, but she'd have to drink 5 cups a day. I don't see how we can get her to drink the first until we stop the convulsions. Maybe we could get her to swallow some feverfew. But there is one thing I'm hoping.
Nadine's long, damp hair hung around her face as she pawed through her bag. She came up with another small, brown bottle.
Yes, I did bring it.
What is it?
Tincture of Maypop. It's a strong sedative and also a painkiller. I've heard my pa say that it settles people who are in a state of nervous shakes. I think he may have meant shakes like convulsions. Since it's a tincture, we can put some on the back of her tongue. She'll swallow it that way.
Kara shuddered violently in Colin's arms. Colin embraced her tighter until she settled a bit. She didn't know if she liked the idea of having to rely on Nadine's "I think," but Colin had no better solution. Something had to be done. Nadine was working her thumbnail at the wax seal on the little brown bottle of tincture of Maypop when the shaft of light coming from the doorway above darkened. Nadine's hands stilled. A motionless, silhouetted figure filled the doorway, seeming to consider them at length. With nary a flutter of his long cloak, he wheeled and started down the ladder. In the silence, but for the hissing torch, Colin absently stroked a protective hand over Kara's brow as she watched the man in a hooded cloak descend the ladder.
This is the end of Side 1, Part B. There is no need to change the balance control. Simply turn this cassette to Side 2 and continue with Part B.